is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Samarkand, Uzbekistan, the meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, formed by the People's Republic of China some years before, never more important in its brief life, because it is also the meeting of Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, and Vladimir Putin, the President of the Russian Federation, in wartime, in the contest for all of Eurasia, what is to be done about the situation in Ukraine, about recovering from the pandemic, about generally the global economy that has been on pause with supply chain difficulties and challenges of geopolitics. I welcome Sarang Shidore of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft and Weifeng Zhang of a research fellow at the Mercatus Center to comment on this meeting of Xi and Putin, but also the larger context of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, because significant states are in attendance observing this meeting of the two. NATO calls them adversaries. India's there. Iran is in observer status. All of the stands are present. Turkey is there. These are the powers of Asia. Gentlemen, thank you very much and greetings. Sarang, I begin with you for your comments about what you see as the significance of this meeting between Putin and Xi in wartime, reminding the audience that the last time they met was prior to the outbreak of the war, the invasion by Russia into Ukraine, when Mr. Xi used the metaphor of no limits partnership. What's changed since then is everything. So right now, how do you regard this meeting? Is this significant or is this a ceremony that will not have lasting effect? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John, for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here on your show. And to answer your question, it is significant because it's a part of a process that is significant. The process is that of Russia and China finding more and more common ground over time. So what we've had since really, you can mark down a year, we can pick 2014 as a year or even earlier, perhaps 2012. But certainly after 2014 and in the last few years, particularly, Russia and China are finding more and more common ground with each other. This is not because there's been a remarkable explosion in trade necessarily, or there's some new bilateral areas where they are finding things to do necessarily. It's really because of what's happening to the international system in terms of how the United States, Russia, and China are relating. And that is what is driving Russia and China to come closer to each other. Now, obviously, this meeting is different because we have a war in Ukraine. We have had an invasion by Russia, an illegal invasion of Ukraine. And that invasion has caused, really has become a wild card when it comes to Eurasia. The wars, as we know, can go hard to predict where they go. The best battle plans may not transpire. So I think Xi and Putin are meeting in a different context than they were before February. The no limits declaration was, of course, rhetorical in the sense there's always limits to any partnership, including NATO, by the way. So that we can set aside a little bit. But there certainly is concern from Russia, probably in the meeting, as to where this war is going. On the flip side, there's the reasons for their convergence remains on the table, and that those reasons in some ways are getting stronger.
Weifeng, I welcome you. Your measure of the significance of this meeting, especially because I believe it's true that nearly 1,000 days Xi Jinping has not been outside of China. He's been in Beijing during the pandemic. So how do you see this meeting, especially noting that Xi Jinping has appeared in public without a mask on? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, too, and thanks for having me, John. I think that's really what I see as the most interesting component of Xi Jinping's trip to this meeting overseas, because of the fact that he has not left, he had not left China until just right now. And I think that has a lot of potential implications for the Chinese economy, because as we have seen for many, many months now, that the very resilient zero COVID policy in China is really jeopardizing the growth engine of the Chinese economy. Even according to official statistics, I think it might even be questionable whether China will have a positive growth this year. If you think about the fact that Chinese statistics are not reliable, the actual growth is probably minus something. And so I think that has been very concerning for the Chinese economy, and that has a lot of consequences to the rest of the world as well. And if China was going to lift any of the zero COVID policy, the first criteria, of course, is that the Chinese president is willing to venture out a little bit. So I think that's a little bit sign, a small sign that it might loosen up. I don't see it coming before this big party congress in October, probably after that. And it probably also would require a new propaganda effort to change the talking point to say, now the mission is accomplished, let's move forward. He will have the Chinese president will have to come up with some way to talk himself out of this zero COVID policy, though.
Thank you. Sarang, I go to a comment that TASS lets us have at this meeting between the president and the general secretary. Mr. Putin is quoted as saying that he is noting the provocations, that's the word that is used by TASS, of the U.S. on Taiwan. That would be one way of expressing sympathy for the challenge for Xi Jinping and the contest with Taiwan. I note also that the Senate has used these last moments to pass a bill that would bring closer aid between the U.S. and Taipei in some fashion. You have commented in recent days of Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan erupting into demonstration of military prowess by the People's Republic of China. So how do you hear Vladimir Putin speaking of Taiwan? Is this an additional threat to Taiwan? Does it serve Putin's purposes to remind Xi that he has an intractable problem in Taiwan the way Russia has what it says is an intractable problem in Ukraine?
I think in the last couple of years, we are seeing the Russians speak more, let's say, explicitly about the U.S.'s Indo-Pacific strategy. They have not been very happy with the AUKUS military arrangement, for example. And on Taiwan, they are clearly expressing a degree of sympathy for the Chinese position or the Chinese situation. This is a case in many ways. What's happening is that theaters that were quite disconnected 5-7 years ago, such as Ukraine and Taiwan, are being geopolitically connected, becoming more coupled with each other through the axis of Eurasia, through Russia and China coming together and needing to express a degree, at least, of support for each other's contestations that actually don't have to do with them. So Russia doesn't get directly affected by what happens over Taiwan, unless it's a major war, obviously. But any contestations, disputes, Russia is not a party, nor is China a party to Ukraine's the issue of Ukraine. In fact, the invasion of Ukraine would, one would think, go against China's longstanding principle of sovereignty and territorial integrity and non-interference. So the fact that the two great powers are expressing sympathy in different degrees to each other's problems that don't have much to do with them by a national interest logic tells you where this is going.
Wei Feng, the puzzle here is what's in it for China? I understand, but I'll ask the question. A turn of the screw, Wei Feng, all right? Can Xi afford for Putin to lose? Is that a risk for him, no matter whether he gets his third term or not?
I don't see Russia losing the war being a huge deal for China. I think it's an issue for China. Certainly, it's possible that the reason President Xi make this trip to see Putin in person might be because he really wants more intelligence, really how the war is going, how long are they going to last? Because it seems evidence suggests that China doesn't really have very good intelligence on its allies. Another example is North Korea. China doesn't seem to have as much knowledge about the nuclear program as the U.S. does. So I think part of it might be the information gathering, but I don't see that even Russia losing the war would be a huge deal for China compared to all these issues that China already has domestically and all the political challenges that she might be facing in his leadership transition.
By saying that, do you see that she can go on without Putin? Should there be a new president in Russia, that would not be a blow to him? Is that your opinion?
I don't think who is the Russian president or whether Putin's power ends matters to Xi Jinping's third term. I think what matters even for him more, we need to go back to what gives the Communist Party legitimacy, right? And conventionally, after the economic reform started in the late 70s, it has been economic growth, which is why now the largest challenge facing Xi is the zero COVID policy and whether he can find a way to get around that without, you know, appearing to be wrong, because the Chinese leader doesn't want to be wrong, but he is in fact wrong, right? So how does he get around that, I think, is the biggest challenge. And in comparison to Russia, I don't think that would be a huge deal for him.
I'm speaking to Sarang Shidore of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft and Weifeng Zhang of the Mercatus Center, George Mason University, about the meeting in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, by the two powers of Eurasia. We're going to turn to where they are, in fact, in the vast canvas of Central Asia when we come back. I'm John Bashaw.